Welcome back, Tad Potters. Here we are. Crazy week of Champions League action, which kind of has overshadowed the Premier League a little bit because it was so insane.
Yeah.
I kind of forgot what happened. Yeah, I totally forgot what happened in the Premier League. So we were sitting here trying to come up with the format for today's pod. And PJ PM and even PL.
Yeah.
It's a lot of producers. Yeah. I mean, we have a huge team that put. I mean, it takes a village. They come up with the formats. They've got great ideas. They put it in front of me and say this looks like what everyone's talking about. We forgot what happened in the Premier League because
crazy days.
Well, Paris.
But the thing is, I don't think anybody expected that to happen. And the Real Madrid game had just dominated the headlines.
Insane.
Like I was working with the two Robbies on their podcast too, and I emailed them yesterday before the game, and I said, hey, I want you to watch the Real Madrid game. I know you were probably watching Spurs because that's the biggest story in the Champions League. Unless something
crazy
happens.
That was done right away.
We didn't think so after the first leg, though. But my point is because I knew they hadn't watched it because we're focusing on Spurs. So I was like, please watch it. This is leading this podcast for you guys. Unless this Man United, depleted Man United squad somehow pulls off the upset. And as soon as Rashford hit the penalty, I emailed both of them and said, okay, so I guess Man United's back at the top of the pod now.
So we tore the format up. We don't even have a review.
We really don't even have one.
I'm gonna change the review. So keep it in the reviews, Tad Potters. Love you guys. Reviewing the show. We used to do, and on the fly. I haven't even consulted with you.
Surprise to me.
This is real radio. I'm gonna change the request. So review the show and give us your rule change that solves handball in the game because it's an absolute mess, and we'll get into it. Very relevant in our Champions League discussion today. So we're just going to have two topics today. We're going to have a monster Champions League conversation, and then we'll finish up with the title race based off of what just happened this past weekend. So talk a little Liverpool, Manchester City. So give us your best rule where people don't freak out every time a handball is awarded in the box.
The wording has to be right.
Give us your best wording. Give us your best wording. There's no panacea. There's no solving the handball epidemic.
Yeah.
But give us your best attempt, and I'm going to provide you with my best attempt on the show today. So let's talk Champions League. Wow. So, you know what? Why don't I shut up, which is very rare for this pod, and we start with Lukaku's interview right afterwards, conducted by a Manchester United legend, now in the TV space, Gary Neville, was there, interviewed the man, Lukaku, who was very important on the night, frustrating but incredible night, and he put in a shift, and he's gaining trust with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer recently. This is what Gary Neville asked him right after the game.
What has Ole done? Because the difference is just, it's incredible.
He's done a lot. You know, when I came back in, you know, for me, personally, he had a plan. He wanted me to be really sharp in 3 or 4 weeks. And that's what happened. It took 3 or 4 weeks. I did a lot of interval work and a lot of finishing. And, you know, now I can say that I'm fully fit. But then for the team, he made us play offensive football. He gives the young players the confidence. And, you know, sometimes it's tough. But at the right time, he knows also to give a compliment. And in training, we do a lot of small games, a lot of focus on our offensive part of the game. And that's what the players like. So, you know, we just try to come in every game and win the games.
I heard you through the dressing room door all singing his name. Yeah. Was that because he's going to get the job now? Are you singing for him to get the job?
I think it's been decided. I think he's going to get it. You know, he should get it, man. Look at the games that we played. You know, everybody was talking, I think, after the first four games because we played, with all respect, against lesser opposition. But then when we won a Tottenham away, Chelsea away, then Arsenal in the FA Cup, now this game today, I mean, what else does he have to do, man? I don't know.
Beat Arsenal Sunday.
Yeah, beat Arsenal again. I mean, that would be nice. But, you know, he keeps us hungry. And, you know, we as players, we want more. That's a good thing. And, you know, it's a good time to be part of this team.
Well done tonight. Incredible. One of the best I've ever seen, honestly. Well done.
So that last phrase, there's a lot of things we want to take out from that interview.
Yeah.
That last comment from Gary Neville, Think of the nights he's been a part of. I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer helped to architect one of the most amazing moments. I mean, think of that game against Bayern Munich and Sheringham and Solskjaer and going and doing the impossible that night, the treble season, all the things that Gary Neville has been through in his Manchester United career and has witnessed, too, as a pundit at this point. And he said one of the best he's ever seen, one of the best he's ever witnessed. I mean, Eric Cantona was there, who led. I mean, King Eric was like, yeah, that was... He was my spirit animal in my youth, yeah. when I was coming up and trying to emulate anything I saw. He was there and he was almost speechless. There was that video that went viral of him just saying, "I'm so happy," mm-hmm. you know. And legends who have been a part of some of the most incredible Manchester United moments were reduced to just being incredulous, and it was an unthinkable result. Based off of, and you said it, the squad that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had to take mm-hmm. to the Parc des Princes against a slightly depleted team. I mean, you'd say when you have no Neymar, I mean that's a
Cavani depleted was
team.
Still
but come on, yeah. I mean Mbappe and Di Maria, who by the mm-hmm. way, definitely in the reverse fixture at Old Trafford, just shows he still yep. can break a game mm-hmm. open. You know, Verratti. I mean, it was just I was at some points during that game watching, thinking, God, PSG are just irresistible. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no way they can keep them at bay. And for Lukaku, one of the players who would be in a very, very small group of disgruntled yep. Or upset because this resurgence and this renaissance and incredible run Manchester United are on. He hasn't featured really in it mm-hmm. until recently. So you'd think it would be tough for him to muster the type of compliments he just gave, and he gave them in a totally genuine way. Yeah. And I think he's showing his character, right? I mean, he's been asked to play out right a few mm-hmm. times and track back. I mean, this was a tough game that was almost won in a Jose Mourinho fashion. I mean, this was a full-on... I mean, this was a park the yeah. bus at Park... The
which Prince, it was, had to be.
It had to be. I mean, it was a back five, you know, no Pogba. Mm-hmm. There were kids that made their, you know... debuts. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's teenagers coming on. I mean, it was remarkable that they were able to put together that performance under the circumstances to stay alive in the Champions League against one of the favorites to go on and win the Champions League, especially after the first leg and what PSG did to them there. Mm-hmm. And he almost, it sounded like he slipped. He's got the job. Like, you know, I'm hearing, yeah, he's got the job. Like, mm-hmm. he's got the job now. How do you, I mean, things have to go really, really bad through yeah. the rest of the season. And listen, that's possible. The game is, you know, short term. Fans are very knee-jerky. You know, the same fans that Manchester United fans that wanted to cause me physical harm for saying that Jose Mourinho was not the right guy and you needed to fire him well before it got bad. Are now saying this was the greatest move that we've got Ole. I mean, I'm so glad we did this. And, you know, I'm totally behind this club. Yeah. Look at this. This is what we always needed to do. I mean, fans are knee-jerky. So it won't take much for people to change their mind. But I just kind of like what I think he perfectly summed it up, Lukaku. What does he have to do? What does Ole Gunnar Solskjaer have to do to prove he's the right guy to take Manchester United forward? If he hasn't proved it yet, mm-hmm. I'm not sure what they'd be waiting for.
I mean, the only thing you could say is actually deliver a trophy. That's the one thing he hasn't done.
But the guy they want hasn't.
Yeah. Pochettino. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So it's like, yes, you're right. Yeah, if he were able to win
a
trophy, that's an easy one.
Really nitpicky is what yeah. I'm saying, you know.
But, I mean, I think he hasn't – they haven't announced it yet because they don't need to, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I think they will. I think they will announce him as manager before the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And I honestly wouldn't be shocked if there's an announcement Monday. I mean, get through the weekend, you know, kind of like let yeah. you know let get back to the Premier League, get back. If he beats Arsenal, mm-hmm. he gets the job 100%. They announce it on that Monday. I mean, look at the Manchester United Twitter handle is kind of an interesting window into the psychology and feeling of the club. Ever since he got the job, it's been a PR firm for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you know, and mm-hmm. and. Initially, I think there was a hope and it was a deflection. It was a distraction away from a terrible decision they made, allowing a manager to come in that was really depreciating the history and the pedigree of the club on his way out, which was taken a long time. And so they loved that they were back to this history and the nostalgia. Yeah. But ever since then, it's almost like a campaign for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And why not? Because he keeps giving them great content and great things to do. The players, I mean, that's a data point that if you're in the, you know, you're the Glazers, you're in the boardroom. When you find out that the entire team after that performance were chanting the name of the manager in the dressing room, you think to yourself, thank God. After all the mistakes we've made since Sir Alex Ferguson, at least we're back here for right now. Does it mean he's going to go win titles? Does it mean that, you know, they're going to be challenging next year and it's going to be back to what it used to be? No, it's never going to be what it used to be. But this feels the closest it's ever felt since then. Mm-hmm. And Solskjaer is not only Solskjaer, he's Solskjaer, Carrick, Phelan, Cantona, you know, like all of that package of alumni, you know, force and energy and profile is behind this situation right now. If you were to not hire him, you kind of immediately turn all of that positive force that's a wave behind this club right now, carrying it forward, into a negative force with one decision. So it's becoming almost impossible for them not to give him the job.
Yeah, I think all Manchester United fans would agree this is the biggest win they've had in the post-Sir Alex era. The only one you could maybe argue is close to it is when they came back and beat Manchester City last season. But in the end, that didn't mean anything because they still lost the title. They actually lost the following week to West Brom, and it kind of summed up how bad that season was or how disappointing that season was that they weren't able to keep pace. So this win last night reminded, like you just said, all of the old Manchester United fans, the players, coaches, of what it was like in the Ferguson era. So it's just hard to – I think everybody just – they feel like that gap is now closed from Fergie to now. It's now reconnected again. So it's almost impossible to see them not name him manager. The only thing I would say is that they might still wait till the summer just in case something – there's some big drop off or whatever happens. Is he even said in one of the interviews yesterday, they said, you know, they kept asking him, it was like, it's official now, you're the manager. And he says, no, wait till the summer. And pretty much all the interviews, no, wait till the summer. And one of the questions was, well, but if you're going to be the manager next season, wouldn't it be better to be named now so you can start preparing for next season? And he said, that doesn't bother me because I'm a fan of the club no matter what. So he doesn't care. Even if he does go, even if he's not named at the end of the season, he says he'll still do whatever he has to do to move the club
They have
forward.
No jeopardy of losing him.
Yeah, it's just interesting that the selflessness for him to say that.
Though, well, it's
you know? And it might be you know, the company to the fans and everything.
But listen, whether it's genuine or not, it's what he has to say. And I think he'll be announced before the end of the season for these reasons. One is I think he'd do a good job. Mm-hmm. I think it's the right hire. Forget all the gimmicky kind of, you know, the good feeling and the good buzz kind of stuff. He's going to do a good job, and he is doing a good job. I don't think they're going to get Pochettino. So don't wait and then miss out on Pochettino, and then miss your opportunity to empower him by announcing him as your choice, not your backup. Because if you wait till the summer, it becomes a very backup hire. Mm-hmm. If you do it now, even though we all realize he wasn't their first choice, you empower him as your first choice. And doing it when you don't have to makes it more meaningful. Knowing that they can wait till the summer and announce it then, it won't have the bang. It won't have the power. It won't make the statement that it will make. If they announce it now, a week after there's a picture of, you know, he and Sir Alex Ferguson and Eric Cantona in the dressing room. You know, it's like that picture made the hair stand up on my arms. Like I got goosebumps with that picture. That's you can harness and bottle that. I mean, you can monetize it, but you can use it for good performances. So don't waste that trick. You have that trick all the way until a point where it's clear your other options didn't work, and that's why you're announcing it. So I think they've got to announce it pretty soon.
Yeah. It's hard to see why not. The only thing, just to play devil's advocate a little bit here, is...
That's what you're here for.
Since he's come in, Manchester United's basically been an underdog, I would say, the entire time that he's come in. They've never had that because they were so far behind when he came in. It's just like, all right, let's just see if you can get this club back.
And they've gotten worse every week since he's been there, not performances wise, but people were dropping like flies.
Exactly. The only match I was going to say where they came in as favorites was probably the first leg of this PSG match because it was the complete opposite where PSG didn't have Cavani and Neymar, mm-hmm. and it looked like they were going to, and Verratti was just coming back from an injury. So
yeah, he looked a little shaky.
So everyone was saying, okay, Man United's the much stronger team coming into this competition. And then that was where the letdown, the only loss he's had so far was the one letdown where PSG completely outperformed them at Old Trafford and won. You come back to the second leg, they've got that underdog mentality again because especially with all the injuries that have happened now since then, Pogba suspended. I mean, again, the list is Pogba, Martial, Alexis, Lingard, Mata, Matic, Herrera, Phil Jones, Valencia, and Darmian all out. They're all unavailable for this game, all regular players.
By the way, have you heard him complain about that?
Oh, yeah. No, he's never. Yeah. Imagine Mourinho. I know. That had happened to him. So my point is, they haven't been in that position where they are Manchester United, I guess, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, so, they're expected to win. So he's position.
It's almost exactly. It's okay. In some of these matches, when they played Spurs a few weeks ago and they pulled off that 1-0 win with thanks to De Gea, that would have been okay if they drew or lost that match. You know, I just they haven't had that expectations since he's been there where they're supposed to be one of the top clubs. So that would be the only thing is he hasn't been in
this
that
weekend.
Situation.
You'd think that
that's true. Yeah, that it could be.
Probably now it's switching where people expect them to beat Arsenal.
Well, and I think that's probably the pressure he has now. I mean, look, they could go and win the Champions League. Obviously, it all depends on the draw and everything. But
what if they got Manchester City in the final? What if we had an all Manchester?
That'd be pretty cool. We could have a Manchester Derby, FA Cup, and Champions League final potentially.
I want a camera on Jose, which there will be because he's in the studio nonstop now.
Yeah.
For those games when those happen.
Yeah. It'd be pretty intense.
Which, by the way, I've got a problem now because of the Real Madrid game. We'll get onto that in a second. Yeah. So finish your.
No, I think he has to finish top four now. I think he has to maintain.
What, you mean to get the job?
I think so. I think it's a disappointment if they don't finish top four because they're right there.
But
he has gotten them there, but I think. But he says, and we can play the bite right now where he says, this is Manchester United. We're not old. This is an old school Manchester United. This is Manchester United. This is what we're expected to do.
Yeah.
So if he's going to stick to that, they're expected to finish top four now.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
I think he deserves a job. I think he could end up doing a great job with it too. I just think there are some things he hasn't been fully tested on yet that we haven't seen, which is what the board could be looking at or doubters could be looking at.
The biggest thing he's been tested on is the thing you won't know about any other manager. How do they handle sitting in that seat? Mm-hmm. How do they handle being the manager of Manchester United Football Club? That's one of the biggest things that, listen, Jose Mourinho and Louis van Gaal, two of the most experienced and successful managers out there. I mean, these guys are legends and huge egos and completely qualified in terms of their resume to go succeed there. Both of them look very uncomfortable in that position.
Yeah,
different reasons.
Let me play it because I think it goes along well with what you're just talking about.
Was this old school Man United?
No, Man United. It's Man United. It's happened so many times, and of course we don't want to say that it's just old school. This team has created history themselves, and we can do it again.
So I don't think if Mourinho or Van Gaal or even Pochettino comes in and say that, it doesn't have the same weight because he's done it. He's been part of those teams. He can say that, and it means more. I think that's what he brings. That, and a lot of people have said this about comparing him to Pochettino. He knows what it's like to win titles in Champions Leagues for Manchester United.
He also he also at every step, which is the complete opposite from Jose. He distances himself from the success. Mm-hmm. So, none of the players made history, and it's the club is. I remember when Jose was asked, some reporter one time asked him, how fortunate do you feel to be a part of Manchester United? Yeah. And his answer was an easy answer. So fortunate, one of the greatest clubs, blah, blah, blah. His answer was, first off, he didn't say I am fortunate. He goes, well, Manchester United is one of the greatest clubs on the planet, and I'm one of the greatest managers on the planet. So it was like, He took a softball question to say something nice about Manchester United, turned it into
about him.
Him saying, "Well, of course, like they want me. I'm a big deal.
I've won all these titles at all these
and
other
so
clubs." Yeah.
It's so refreshing to see someone who is already a Manchester United mm-hmm. legend not need any of the credit, any of the he deflects it and pushes it, and he's good with the media.
Yeah.
I mean, he's which is part of the job now, more now than ever. He just constantly pushes it to no, listen, it's not okay to underachieve. We should. Manchester United has been winning these games for a long time, he just said, yeah. right? So kind of minimize the accomplishment in a way to say this is what's expected of us. I remember he got asked a question about top four. He said, yeah, well, we need to be challenging for titles. We need to finish top mm-hmm. four. I'm not going to sit here and say we don't have the team to do that or whatnot. No, Manchester United should always do that. And it's like, it's just refreshing to see someone show that level of respect to one of the greatest clubs mm-hmm. on the planet. But also walk the walk.
Yeah.
I mean the performances. It's not just lip service.
No, not for
so
sure.
So it's been wild going from one of the greatest clubs in the world to what many think outside of Barcelona mm-hmm. is the biggest and greatest club in the world. It took one of the biggest beatings from a team that should not be going into that town. Mm-hmm. And by the way. A very young Ajax team, if you'll remember, Manchester United snuck by in Europa League final.
Yep.
So Ajax, always a young team, mm-hmm. still pumping out players that are cerebral,
yeah.
Very intellectual, fluid patterns of play, total football squad, absolutely put it on Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. And so I was watching this one out of the corner of my eye. I was at Lorelei in New York City. We've been doing some Street FC watch parties, and I rolled in for one, and we were watching, and out of the corner of my eye, every time I looked over, Ajax had a chance, and then all of a sudden, I just started watching the score just get I honestly thought there was something wrong, because I missed all the moments, but then I realized, holy cow, Ajax is they're going to dump Real Madrid out of this competition.
Yeah.
So I haven't watched that one yet. Did you watch it?
I the same thing. I caught the end of it and caught the highlights.
It looked like a thrashing.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, I mean, Real Madrid did have some chances, but the defense was just in absolute, terrible shape.
And Marcelo's been phased out of
Marcelo's
the squad.
Marcelo's out right now.
They kept showing his face on the bench.
Isco's been out for a while. I mean, that's the thing that's just strange about this team is, okay, yes, Cristiano Ronaldo left. They didn't go and get a true replacement for him. Instead, they went and got Thibaut Courtois, which they didn't need to get because they already had one of the best goalies in the world. But they still have Gareth Bale. They have Benzema. They have
Asensio. Is coming to.
Well,
he's
one of the ones that was supposed to be the up and coming, and he hasn't.
Yeah.
Same with Lucas Vazquez. These guys are not Ronaldo.
No.
Vinicius is the one guy to watch. He's only 18 right now. Still, mm-hmm. he's the one guy who and he was the one that probably looked the most frustrated. Similar to actually Mbappe when Mbappe was the one, and I think this is part of the reason PSG lost is. Mbappe, who's 20 years old, shouldn't be the calming force on the team. There should be a more veteran presence there. Same thing with Real Madrid. They don't have – nobody was stepping up like that. Maybe that was in part because Ramos was out, which was his own fault because of the intentional yellow card. the quote was, looking at the result, I'd be lying if I said I didn't force the booking. It's not to underestimate the opponent nor to think that the tie is over. But in football, you have to make tough decisions. Well, that tough decision just completely backfired in your face.
You idiot!
So – full disclosure, I am a Barcelona fan, so nothing makes me happier than seeing this happen.
Yeah, I see it on
happen.
Your face. Yeah, but, the Tad Potters can't see your grin right
but,
now.
But I think everybody was kind of happy. I think neutrals were happy to see it because nobody liked seeing what Ramos did.
Yeah.
And especially admitting it. And he did get punished for it with an additional match ban.
Tad Pals, at me with your thought on this one. Everyone hates Sergio Ramos, and I get it. I'm kind of able to compartmentalize and see. I mean, listen, what he did to Salah was nasty. I mean, mm-hmm. that was an attempt to hurt. And outside of that, he's one of the best defenders in the world. And part of his game is the dark arts. And he gets away with it more often than not. And so it's like, listen, I would hate to play against him. And listen, if I was a rival fan, I'd hate him. It just seems like the majority of people hate him. And it discounts instead of accepting that he's a wonderful player.
He is
because he's an incredible player.
That's the difficult aspect with him is he, I mean, he's a huge reason why they won 4 of the last 5 Champions Leagues and 3 in a row. There was the first one back in 2014. He had the header at the final moments that send that game to extra time. And if he doesn't make that header, who knows if they win any of these Champions League.
And it's like he's the defender version of Luis Suarez, right? Where it's like,
or Diego Costa.
Yeah, where it's like you don't feel this way about strikers as often because their dark arts, they get hit so often. You kind of forgive them when they get nasty, but like he's no different. He's just a defender that's in isolated last ditch 1v1 situations, and he can be a bit nasty, and it's like I love Diego Costa. I love Luis Suarez. Do I think some of the stuff, you know, some of the dark arts and the other things are repugnant? Yeah, I hate some of that stuff, but it doesn't stop me from loving them and thinking they're brilliant players.
But that's why it's disappointing, because I think if he's on the pitch in this exact second leg,
that probably doesn't happen. Yeah,
and he made that decision again to take himself out because he thought they were through. So now this kind of brings up an interesting point, which I think you want to get to. So they made a similar decision. They brought in a former player.
Speaking of making bad decisions. speaking of bad decisions, was it on this pod?
Yep.
So I, a few pods ago, Real Madrid, obviously looking for a manager. There was an article or some sort of suggestion that Jose Mourinho might be in the running. And I said, there's no way that happens. And if it does happen, I will shave my head on Championship Sunday. And so I'm starting to get really worried. Was it the president?
I think that's where the... Again, since Mourinho's been sacked, there's been little things trickling out that are inching towards this. And that was one of the big ones that Florentino Perez, the president of Real Madrid, came out and said, you know...
We'd kind of welcome him back.
Things didn't end well, but there was a mutual respect with how he came in and turned things around those first couple seasons. So he kind of was hinting at it wouldn't be out of the question that he could return.
Maybe it was a trial balloon to see how fans reacted to that.
It could be. And it didn't sound – it wasn't as – and again, partly because they've been having such a bad season. They're basically – they're out of all competitions right now.
So essentially I'm going to create like 1,000 bot accounts that are fake Real Madrid fans saying, don't ever do it. We hate him.
We're gonna
don't bring him back.
76ers type of situation here where you have the start
creating. I'm gonna have 1,000 burner accounts.
the only thing is the recent quote that came out yesterday was Ramon Calderon, the former president of Real Madrid, who said I think it's almost 100% that Mourinho goes there. So that's what started getting the rumors. But here's the thing: Calderon doesn't have a great relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
So who knows what his agenda is?
He might just be throwing a rock at the hornet's nest. I mean,
well, now the other rumor is also that he could with what happened with PSG, then maybe Tuchel gets the axe, and maybe Mourinho goes there.
That one I said no big club, no super club are going to touch Mourinho with a 10-foot pole, except I think PSG is the last one that I think would do something silly like that.
Yeah.
But now Real Madrid, I mean, I thought no way.
Yeah, well, if you're Mourinho and you had the choice,
it's not happening.
You would take PSG, wouldn't you? Assuming you can keep that squad in place, you have Neymar, Cavani. You have a front three of Neymar, Cavani, and Mbappe.
You don't take over Real Madrid that needs to be built up again, and
because I think
isn't a sure thing. He takes sure thing jobs.
Because the only thing that you could say that they're missing, PSG, is sort of that defensive stability. Yeah. That's where they've spent. I think I saw something $1.17 billion since 2011 to basically build this super squad,
and they've
never gotten past the quarterfinals in the Champions League.
And that's Jose's game.
Yeah.
So, like, he needs a sure thing right now in his career. His stock is at an inflection point where one more bad situation, and it's toast. It's done. And so I think that he's always – I don't think he's ever taken over a team, starting with Porto. I don't think he's ever taken over a team that's finished below third the season before. Mm-hmm. And if you go back and look at almost all the teams he took over, outside of Manchester United, which – that's a different scenario because he wanted that job before, and when Moyes got it, wasn't given it, and Manchester United are the biggest club that was going to come after him. Every other club has been right there. It's literally just needed a tiny little thing. Real Madrid don't need a tiny little thing. I mean, in order to bridge the gap to Barcelona at this point, it might take a few seasons and some serious cash. And I just don't think he has the qualities anymore or the credit to last long enough for Real Madrid to get that fixed. And he still is a great manager. Mm. And in a situation where he has the power of wins to fuel his ego and keep away his insecurity that ends up creating remarkable division, he can win at PSG.
Yeah.
And so I could see that happening. I mean, I wouldn't do it if I was PSG, but I can at least see some logic in that. I don't see any logic in the Real Madrid one.
If he does get the job, though, do you want to...
How are we going to
do you
want to
make any modifications to your...
I mean, I can't. You can't now.
Do you want to have more fun with it? Do you want to, like, shave a funny shape into your head or something, that, you know, like we've seen Pogba do or other players?
We
can make this a fun Twitter thing. People can send in their photo. This? They can send their Photoshop versions of what they want your hair to look like when we do
stages.
Stages.
Yes, yes. There will be the group stage.
I mean, I think we should definitely film it. That should be a no-brainer. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I wonder definitely. If we do it on the set on Championship Sunday. I know you said originally go back in the makeup room and do it, but I wonder if we just do it live TV.
Oh man,
give Rebecca the clippers and she just takes it all takes the whole thing off.
Yeah, I'm a bit nervous. I had a lot of confidence when I made that bet. I'm not feeling as confident now, but it's not gonna happen. All right, so let's move back on to Premier League. Mm. So Liverpool, listen, they're not top of the table. They're not favorites statistically. Although I'd said on air, I didn't specify. They're still my favorites to go win it for reasons that aren't being calculated by bookies. But it's this past weekend was just another high profile, very important, high stakes game where the shift in the momentum in the title race was going to be pretty significant. Mm-hmm. And those moments, and I'll sort of go back and end with this past weekend. It started with their ability to potentially go 10 points clear when they went to the Etihad to face Manchester City.
That was January 3rd.
Yeah, so
at a 7-point
that was
lead
the
at
first
that
moment where it was like, okay, now we're getting into the business end of the season. And remember, when they weren't in title races, the Etihad wasn't a scary place for them. I mean, remember when they went there early on in the Klopp era where Coutinho and Firmino absolutely mm-hmm. destroyed Manchester City? They pressed them. Yep. It was the gegenpressing. It was a thrashing. This was the first real timid and unsure performance of the season from Liverpool. Have they been inconsistent? Have they been profligate and sloppy? Have they been disjointed? They've been all of those things, but it never lacked a belief or an attritional drive to just find a way to win the game. But I remember watching that City game and thinking, right out of the gate with some of the personnel decisions and how they set up, why are you respecting Manchester City at this point? Mm-hmm. You know, you now risk two things. You risk losing this game and denting your bravado, like denting your belief that you have the right to go to the Etihad and press those guys and run all over them and be attacking minded. And so that was my first worrying moment. Then you go to the Manchester game, right? So against their actual biggest rivals, mm-hmm. Manchester United. Again, a very calm, calculated, cautious, sometimes just languid and uninventive performance, and then also subbed Salah out with like, I don't know, 15 minutes left or something. I mean, he came out pretty early, and I just. That was also a weakened Manchester United side. Like, you know, it was a Manchester United side still kind of...
Yeah, they'd already started facing the injury crisis.
Well, and then they made three substitutions in the first half. Was it that game that Manchester United...
Yep. Yeah, Pereira, yeah, Alexis. Alexis came in.
I mean, they were Pereira there for came, the yeah. taking. And I was just... I couldn't believe how...
Yeah, that's where Lingard came in first, and then he wasn't quite fit coming back. He came off right away for Alexis.
So it was just another one where I thought, what a missed opportunity. And so at this point, not only are the performances lacking the personality and that sort of, you know, heavy metal football, but Manchester City's gaining ground. Mm-hmm. And so what happens? They go to Goodison mm-hmm. to face their rivals. The last time they were close in a title race, under Brendan Rodgers, the second Merseyside derby, they thrashed mm-hmm. Everton. I think it was like 4-0. Yep. And they went on, they drew the next game, then they went on an 11-game mm-hmm. winning streak. And that's why they were close. And they used the momentum of what was a pretty pivotal match. I think that one was at Anfield. So it wasn't at Goodison that time around, you know, back when Brendan Rodgers got close. So, but it's no excuse. I mean, mm-hmm. Everton have struggled at home. Everton are not a strong team that you really have to fear. But I just saw fear. I saw fear in the game plan. I saw their lowest pass percentage of the season. So they were sloppier than they've ever been before. Salah missed two chances that are well beneath his finishing ability is what he demonstrated on both of those chances. And I'm also confused with the lack of trust in Shaqiri. You know, that's where I'm starting to worry is that, mm-hmm. like, very rarely, and Firmino didn't start this game, very rarely are the top three, you know, that trio, very rarely are they all off their game at the same time.
Yep.
So this game was a collector's item in the fact that all three of them were off their game. Mane's been playing down a central role when Firmino was out. Then he slid into a wide position to replace Origi when Firmino came in the game. Firmino changed things. They were better and more dynamic mm-hmm. in transition. But there's no real bang off the bench. Shaqiri had been that for a few games. And also, I just thought, like, Origi, where does that come from?
Yeah, that Origi's always been a weird one. And that's because that brings up another player who's been disappointing, who looked like at the beginning of the season might be key coming off the bench, and that's Sturridge.
Yeah.
It's kind of shocking that Origi's been the first option in terms of another striker to replace Firmino or Mane or whoever he comes in for, and not Sturridge. Sturridge has just completely disappeared. He's kind of gone back to the Sturridge that's been really struggling few years. So,
and Lallana. I mean, it's just they don't really have – if this attacking team – see, like Manchester City have struggled recently to score. Mm-hmm. But in two games, they scored two goals and outshot their opponents like 45-3. So it's like – It's not that they're just missing chances. They're not really creating boatloads of clear-cut opportunities. And if the defensive unit that really props up this team, when they missed last time, they had conceded like 51 goals or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have a defensive unit that allows them to be very aggressive and very risky. If they don't capitalize on that, I don't see where they improve that off of the bench. I guess there's one X factor here that Oxlade-Chamberlain, right? Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain looks close, and it could be the exact thing that they need right now, where they're starting to slip up and starting to struggle to find that groove of irreverence where they really just break teams down and go after them. The only reason I still have Liverpool as favorites is I just think this is a blip more than a trend and a pattern. I still see them providing the quality that they have. You know, Trent Alexander-Arnold has returned recently. He improves them. He had a hat trick mm-hmm. of assists in that game against Watford. I also think, you know, City still have to go to Old Trafford, right?
Yes, I believe so.
That's a tough one there. You know, I think City ultimately are going to go further in the Champions League than Liverpool, which becomes a bit of a distraction for them.
We could know that a week from now.
Yeah, Kevin De Bruyne got injured again, and so they're losing a bit of depth. I mean, they still have a ridiculous amount of depth, but at least, you know, it's starting to chip away at it. And I just think, listen, there's a reason that it's so rare that teams repeat. It's just a very difficult thing to do. And if they're able to repeat as Premier League champions with how good Liverpool are this season, It will be a legacy group. I mean, mm-hmm. this going from how dominant they were last year to then even not being as dominant, if they're able to go on and win the title and do it in consecutive seasons and add a couple other trophies. I mean, they already won one trophy this year. Mm-hmm. It for me will solidify them as the greatest Premier League team of all time. It will. And I know people want to chuck out all these trophies and stuff, and just I'm not buying it. None of those teams were anywhere near as dominant as Manchester City have been. Manchester City have to get over this hurdle, which means, you know, winning Champions League this year becomes the focus for me. I think Pep is okay if they, I mean, listen, he's not okay, but if you said now you can only have one.
Yeah.
He would say the Champions League.
Well, in terms of titles, if he wants to separate himself from previous Man City managers such as Pellegrini and Mancini,
it's the only bar that
that's the only thing they haven't won. So,
and it's why he was hired.
Yeah,
because it makes you a global brand.
Yeah,
listen, they are a global brand, but winning the Champions League puts you in a different in a different group.
I guess you know you've kind of touched on it with the Shaqiri being kind of baffling. Some of these other guys is underperforming. What do you think Liverpool can do to change? I mean, they're so reliant on those front three, and this will probably be the kind of the stat if they don't win it that could explain why City are ahead of them still. You know, those three have 40. I think it's 40 of the 64 goals, the front three, and then Shaqiri's next with six.
Mm-hmm.
If depending if you count Shaqiri as a midfielder or not, they really only have like four or five goals from midfield. Milner has three. Fabinho has one, and Wijnaldum has two.
And last game against Everton, it was Fabinho, Henderson, and Wijnaldum, right? In the trio in the middle.
I think so, yeah.
It's like, of that group, Wijnaldum is the most creative. Mm-hmm. And listen, he's a wonderful player, but he can be creative through a defensive mentality. Mm-hmm. You know, he still is reliable, and he's a cog in a midfield that has functionality. When you have Fabinho and Wijnaldum, you put the next player has to be an attacking minded player, like Lallana or Shaqiri.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I couldn't believe that in the Merseyside derby. Yes, it's going to be physical and get into tackles. Those guys can do that too. And it's just there were so many moments where the ball got down on the ground and in transition they struggled, where it was desperate for that creative player to link, you know, defense to attack. Mm-hmm. And I was a bit shocked that he went with a more physical defensive midfield trio, and I didn't like that call.
Yeah, I just wonder if he doesn't. I don't know. It's strange because when Liverpool made that run in 2013-14, Jordan Henderson got a decent amount of goals.
Yeah,
he doesn't have any this season. Naby Keita doesn't have any in the Premier League this season. It's just you know. These are some of the guys, Naby Keita especially, were supposed to be these players that were kind of help take them to the next level. And you look at City, they've got Bernardo Silva, David Silva. I think they both have five or six goals apiece. De Bruyne has been injured. I think he's got a couple.
Yeah.
You know, all they get goals from. Fernandinho even gets a goal here and there once in a while. So
why.
That front seven or, you know, or six or seven, however many they have. You're terrified that any of those guys are going to get goals at some point. You don't see that with Liverpool. You're only really worried about the front three when it comes to scoring.
And here's why. The season that Salah had last year justified setting up a team that's totally predicated on him playing next to no defense. I mean, he almost, I would say, if you said his position for the season, he's played right wing. I mean, that's the position that when the teams line up and the sheets come in, that's his role. Based off of his heat map and what he has to do, he's a number nine. He's a number nine with very little defensive responsibilities, and they can do that for two reasons. One is midfielders will whether it's Keita or Wijnaldum, whoever's playing advanced of the holder, always will shade on that right side to go protect the space that Salah gives up. Salah's basically told, stay up there. Because if they send their fullback forward, we're going to catch them, and that happens constantly. We're going to catch them on the counterattack. And then when we possess the ball, Trent Alexander-Arnold or Milner, whoever's playing on that right, is the presence that gives you width, and you float. You find little pockets. You stretch the back line. So I think the midfielders are not expected to be goal scorers because Salah's expected to do so much. And when he doesn't, the void ends up being pretty big. Because you're carrying him. He's a luxury player.
And I think that might be the key difference between Guardiola and Klopp and how they set these teams up is Guardiola is not reliant on one player to score the goals. He expects
them
all
to
play a part.
Well, listen, they're like a bunch of Rolls Royces that have to be able to, like, you know, tow things through the mud. I mean, there are no luxury cars in the Pep Guardiola garage. Every vehicle, doesn't matter if it's a Lamborghini or a Ferrari or a pickup truck, all have to be able to be off the line fast, 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, and corner like they're on rails.
And that's why when we talk about player of the year discussions and things like that, you don't really have a standout Man City player because you could name four or five that deserve it. There hasn't been, you know what I mean? There's if like last year for Liverpool, it was clearly Salah because he was the one guy scoring all the goals and carrying them. for City right now, you could make a case for four or five guys that deserve it, and that's because they all have such important roles, and it changes, you know, week to week.
Did you see the Eto interview that he did? You got to go back and look at it. It's subtitled. He's doing it in French, I believe. For I want to say it was like French TV. It was one of their networks, and it was an interview show. And he was asked about his time at Barcelona and asked about Pep Guardiola. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because a lot of people praise Pep, and you know he's this genius and he's a legend. He's the greatest ever. And every now and then, you know, Ibrahimovic and some people have some pretty nasty things to say about him. And Samuel Eto'o gave a really honest and not incredibly flattering account of his time at Barcelona with Pep. And you have to go back and listen to it and watch it. But I'll give you a couple little anecdotes. One, Pep announced in front of the team that Eto'o was no longer wearing his number. He was giving it to Henri, and it was kind of a shocking thing to do. I mean, it's such a personal thing, your number.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty. That was one of the things where it's like, wow, yeah, that's surprising he would do that, being a player himself. And then I'd say the like most scathing thing that he said, which actually was kind of nasty from Eto'o, but he did it in a charming way. And also it delivered some things about Pep that made you know, sort of less supportive of Pep Guardiola. Mm-hmm. He said, and here's the thing about Pep that was tough. He wasn't a great player. And it was like, oh, like, I mean, I disagree with that, but like he was...
Yeah.
He was saying, you know, Pep was trying to teach me about scoring goals and stuff. And this is where, like, he kind of, you know, he loses a little bit of credibility because it's like, listen, some of the greatest managers in the world weren't even good players. I mean, you don't have to have been in that position to know how to do it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was not a flattering account of his time there where he made the criticism that you hear a few people make of Pep. Is that he does a lot of things for the cameras. So some of the things that he did were, you know, he wouldn't do it in the tunnel. Like when Eto'o left and was at Inter and he came back, Pep didn't say anything to him and saw him in the tunnel. But then afterwards, in front of the cameras, did this whole handshake and something like that. So
yeah,
it was interesting. It was really interesting.
Well, and Eto'o is one of the players that he did stick around for one season. But when Pep first came in, his goal was to basically rid. Of a few of the bad apples that were caught, they were kind of holding Barcelona back, and that was Ronaldinho, Deco, and Eto'o. He got rid of Ronaldinho and Deco right away. Eto'o stuck around 1 year and he helped them win a treble. Mm-hmm. But I think it kind of that some of those quotes might show why Pep felt the need to shift them away.
There is no coach where every former player has a glowing review of their time with.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about that level, especially when you're Eto'o and you're one of the greatest to have played. I mean, he's in a very, very elite group. Mm-hmm. You're not used to being humbled, and you're not used to having to prove yourself against some of them. And then for the others, every day is a constant need to prove yourself. And if you feel like you have, and the manager hasn't seen it. Confirmation biased and, you know, the sort of cognitive dissonance that won't allow you to think I've made a mistake or I'm not good enough to start, you immediately get upset and angry with the manager. And so it doesn't surprise me there's some players that don't like Pep because he is incredibly demanding. But it doesn't change my opinion of Pep. I've been fortunate enough to sit and talk with them. I've talked to several of his former players. I've watched his teams now for a long time. He's an incredible manager.
Yeah.
But it was interesting.
Just to wrap up, go back to Liverpool. How do you want to see them line up? I think Firmino's going to be back. I think hopefully he'll start. Midfield, I guess. How would you want to see them line up this weekend against Burnley?
Well, I mean, Burnley's becoming a tough challenge because they've gotten back to kind of real direct, low block, tight unit, spring on the counter attack, you know, balls in the air. So, The way through Burnley is in wide positions. I'd want to see them, instead of Mane and Salah tucking in and inverting like they constantly do, I'd love to see them stay very wide. It's actually how Manchester City play.
Yep.
And add a creative central player. So add a Shaqiri, add a Lallana, and you're not going to be outnumbered, and you're going to possess the ball a lot of the time. So you need someone that can pick a very delicate and difficult to see pass centrally. And then you need someone that can open up the game quickly once you've dragged Burnley to one side of the field. So I would start with the 4-3-3, but I would do it in a different way.
Okay.
And the first transition I would make is to 4-2-3-1. And at that point, start taking risks where fullbacks have very high positions, and you use the two holders to protect that space that you give up on the flanks.
And you'd put Fabinho and Wijnaldum there?
Yeah. Because Wijnaldum as a holder still gives you, I think out of all the midfielders, Wijnaldum's the most important. I don't think anyone can play all of the roles like Wijnaldum can.
Mm-hmm.
He's played the holder, he's played the attacking midfielder, he's played one of the transitional eights on the side.
He's extremely versatile.
He's number one. And then it's Henderson or Fabinho. That's the decision you have to make.
No Naby Keita.
I like Keita a lot. I don't think he's proved good enough at either holding responsibilities or attacking responsibilities to justify keeping someone else out. Like, yeah. I want to see Shaqiri before I want to see Keita.
Yeah, it's just... that's just disappointing to me, because this is a guy we're supposed to be so excited about, and he's not.
Might take time.
He's still a very good player. Yeah,
it's
just. I feel like this is the type of moment where you need someone like that to step up. Sort of how last year Bernardo Silva wasn't playing much the first half of the season. He came in and got a bunch of goals in the second half when they really needed him. You're not seeing that from Liverpool right now. And I just don't know which player is going to come in and do that.
Well, here's the thing. Liverpool have to keep it close. We need a last day.
We're both neutrals, but we're rooting for it.
A last day title. Listen, my ego and insecurity wants me to be right and have Liverpool win the season and win the title. Putting that prediction forward before the season, I got absolutely crushed by people. So it's going to be fun to hopefully have them meet a big crow. But I mean, once I get rid of my childish insecurity, I want to see a last day title race. I want to see a championship Sunday where who knows how this is going to shake out. That's what I'm desperate for. And right now it's set up to go that way. So as long as it keeps going that way, I'm good. All right. So let's pray for the requisite parity or dominance that both these teams stay exactly where they are for the rest of the season. But until then, stay on your feet, guys.